Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking today with PJ Brooks, Acting Director of the Division of Rare Diseases Research Innovation at the National Center for Advancing Translational Sciences, also known as NCATS, which is itself a division of the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Brooks is currently among the co-chairs of the Bespoke Gene Therapy Consortium. Thank you for being with us today.
Great. Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us what is the Bespoke Gene Therapy Consortium?
Sure. So just a little bit of background, or the topic we're trying to address in the Bespoke Gene Therapy Consortium has to do with better and more efficient ways to get gene therapy trials started up and running, particularly for diseases that are of no commercial interest because they're so rare. And as many of your listeners probably know, about 80% of all rare diseases are genetic and often monogenic, which means they're caused by mutations in a single gene. And therefore, gene therapy, which in this case means providing a functional copy of the mutant gene into the patient's cells, is a therapeutic strategy that is potentially applicable to many, many rare diseases. So the Bespoke Gene Therapy Consortium is a public-private partnership that is sponsored by the Foundation for the NIH, which is not part of the NIH. And the Foundation for NIH allows those of us here at NIH to work with pharmaceutical partners. So the consortium is supported by multiple NIH institutes and centers, as well as about 11 or so pharmaceutical company partners. And the idea is to find better ways to streamline and make the process of starting up AAV gene therapy trials more efficient, with a particular focus on these diseases of no commercial interest. The sense is that the big pharmaceutical companies, they can usually, if they want to, they can get their trials up and running. For many of these patient groups, it takes a long time. So we're trying to streamline the process for them. But of course, to the extent we can do that and streamline the regulatory process, that actually benefits AAV gene therapy for all diseases. And so that's the sort of confluence of interest that we have with our pharmaceutical partners. And I should also mention, too, a very important component of the BGTC is the Center for Biologics at FDA, which is headed up by Peter Marks. That's the part of the FDA that regulates gene therapy, and his interest and his vision has really been critical to standing up the BGTC.
Just a question, approximately how many people do you have working on this consortium, and what level of investment in dollar terms are we talking about?
The total investment between NIH and the for-profit entities is close to $90 million. So it's a very large public-private partnership. As I said, about 11 pharmaceutical companies, about 11 different parts of NIH. Each one of those entities probably has multiple people participating in various roles. So I guess 40 or 50 people in total working on this so far. You know, we're still in the process of getting things up and running, and some of the activities that we'll be doing as part of the BGTC include funding basic science studies to make AAV gene therapy more efficient and producing AAV vectors more efficient, but also a series of up to six or so clinical trials of AAV gene therapy. So once all that's up and running, it'll be quite a large effort.
You said something very interesting. I should point out that you did give a presentation recently at the NORD Rare Disease Orphan Drugs Breakthrough Summit. And for those who don't know, NORD is the National Organization for Rare Disorders. in Washington, D.C. Yep.
So I should mention NORD is also a partner in the BGTC.
And you did say that the number of diseases at current rates is estimated at 7,000 and rising, and yet those with approved therapies, it comes to about 600. And you said that at the rate we're going, it'll take about 2,000 years to get treatments for all those diseases. Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of a back of the envelope calculation that our original NCATS director did. And it just goes to illustrate the point that we really have to do something different if we want to get treatments or even clinical trials open for all of these diseases. And I think one of the ways to do that is to stop doing things just one disease at a time from scratch and try to take advantage of therapeutic platforms such as AAV gene therapy and really develop them and implement them as therapeutic platforms. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with the BGTC. Make it so it's not always a complete one-off situation and everything has to be done from scratch.
Speaking of these diseases, since there are so many of them, you obviously have to pare them down and pick and choose which diseases you want to approach. And you said that your office got 61 applications and that you have since cut them down to 14 diseases.
Yes.
Will you be further cutting that to a smaller number of diseases?
Yes, we ultimately want to get to, you know, up to six to do the actual clinical trials. And that simply, that reflects the limited budget that we have.
I see.
But it's important to note that the goal of this is to sort of use these six diseases as test cases to develop a streamlined regulatory pathway. And if we can do this successfully, that should ultimately benefit many, many more diseases in the future.
Is there any indication at this point which those diseases will be?
I mean, the list of 14 is on the website. What we've tentatively been thinking about is to have some different target tissues, different routes of administration. So if you look on the list, we've got several neurologic diseases, several eye diseases, and then several diseases where you'd have to deliver AAV systemically. Those might be either metabolic diseases or disease affecting muscle or bone, for example.
When do you hope to have a list of those diseases that you're actually going to select?
We would hope to be having that finalized by February, hopefully sooner than that. I think what we're finding out is it's one thing to choose the disease. It's another thing to actually get all of the process and get the trial sort of funded. You know, there's various agreements that have to be signed and things like that, and that can take some time. But certainly we would hope to have those all pretty well identified by February, if not sooner.
Could you explain how you got involved in this project?
When I started NIH, I was actually doing research in a research laboratory on rare single gene disorders, particularly those that affected the nervous system. And at that time, the research was focused more on, you know, understanding the molecular mechanisms in these different diseases. But at that time, that we started to see real progress in gene therapy, in particular, better ways to deliver gene therapy into the brain. And I became focused on the idea if we really wanted to help people, rather than thinking so much about the molecular mechanism of the disease, if it's a monogenic disease, the most efficient way, if you can do it, is to put the missing gene into the right cells. And I went through some different career twists and turns and ended up in the Office of Rare Diseases Research at NIH that subsequently became NCATS or became part of NCATS. And I was also there involved in some other related programs when the opportunity to participate in the BGTC came up. And so I happily volunteered for that because, you know, it's a topic of great interest to both myself, but also to NCATS and our leadership. And I really appreciate the opportunity to have this leadership role in this wonderful effort.
Dr. Brooks, thanks very much for talking with us. Congratulations on your 1-year anniversary and best of luck in this project.
Great. Thanks, Larry. Nice to talk to you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.